adopted and moved forward as introductions as committee bills. Not seeing or hearing any, so ordered. We'll close the work session for the purposes of introduction of committee bills, realizing that we may be reopening for another set later. With that said, at this point, then I want to go over a framework. You know, as we can see today, we have a number of people here to testify on the bill that we're going to be having a public hearing only on. That's Senate Bill 423. So at this time, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 423. Because of the time that we have today, we need to close the committee down about 4:30 because members have other obligations, this being the last day before bills can be filed. They need to be back in their offices so everyone can make certain that they make the 5 o'clock deadline. According to that, then I'm going to go ahead and start having testimony and realize that we may need to continue or, let's say, close the public hearing if we are, and everyone may not be able to testify today. So I've got one sheet here, and I know there's going to be more than one sheet. What we do here is we have two more sheets. What we have is a rule that if you're over 100 miles from the Capitol, we will allow you to testify first out of a courtesy and understanding that it may be required to not hear everybody. And so what we're going to do is go through the list and make certain that we have everyone marked off. And don't be embarrassed, don't be offended if I ask you where you're from, because we do want to make certain that we stick to the rules. The other thing that I'm going to ask you to do is limit your testimony. If you have written testimony that you're handing in, we do not need you to read your testimony into the record. That is the purpose of handing it in. We'd like for you to summarize whatever your testimony may be. You will hear from multiple people maybe before you testify. If you have heard testimony from one person already that you agree with, you can just say, I agree with the testimony that's come in before, and summarize again. What we're trying to do is make sure everyone that's here today who wants to give testimony has the ability. I'm not at this point going to limit the length of testimony, but I am going to take the prerogative as the chair that if you're, let's say, belaboring a point, I may ask you to move on. Again, what I'm trying to do is make certain everyone has the opportunity to testify that's here today, and that way we will be fair to everyone. And with that said, what we also will be doing is mixing in some of the testimony of individuals that will be for and against. We do have an opening panel that we will do. That opening panel is going to be Lee Berger and Andrea Myers. So if those two want to come forward, and then what we'll do is from there I will be taking up panels of three, and with first ones being those of 100 miles or greater.
We have a Judy Adamson is here. Could she be added to this first panel?
Sure.
Thank you.
Since we have three chairs, you can do it. And whoever wants to start off first. And the other thing that we need you to please do, when you give your testimony, you need to state your name for the record, and that way we know who's speaking. And the other thing I forgot to ask everyone, our communication system, and since the audio is tied in to the web and for capturing for other people to be able to listen to either in stream or later, because of that, we do have some issues with cell phones. So if you have some type of communicating device, cell phone, BlackBerry, whatever it may be, I need you to put it into the off position, not just the meeting or the silent, but the off, because sometimes when your communications will interfere with the microphone. So if you will turn those off, it will be great, and those who control the system will be happy. With that, whoever wants to start off, give us your name and your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the Commerce Committee. First, my name is Leland Berger, L-E-L-A-N-D-B-E-R-G-E-R. I'm a lawyer. I practice from my home in inner northeast Portland. I'm in Representative Shields and Senator Carter's district. I practice statewide representing patients and their caregivers from Ashland to Astoria and Brookings to Baker City. First, I want to express my appreciation both personally and on behalf of the Drug Policy Reform community in Oregon to the chair for its leadership and compassion in moving forward on this bill, especially in light of a competing bill that's already been passed out of committee. We're very grateful for that.
And let me just clarify for that. There is another bill that already has had testimony, another bill that was 465. We're not here to listen to 465. What we're here is to tell me what you like or don't like about 423 with or without improvements. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Przanski. I've provided the committee with two documents. One is the Civil Rights Operations Manual from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, their policy regarding medical marijuana. And I mention that because one of the concerns about the existence of discrimination and the need to make sure that corporations are held accountable for discrimination and don't get to avoid it is that there be clarity in the law. There's great concern, I know, among corporations about the lack of what they perceive to be the lack of clarity. And I wanted to provide you with this operations manual from the Civil Rights Division of our Bureau of Labor and Industries to show you that that's not a problem. Current law requires an employer to indicates that nothing in the law requires an employer to accommodate the medical use of marijuana in any workplace. Boley interprets that to mean in the workplace, and that takes care of that. As one of the co-drafters of the Medical Marijuana Act that passed by the people in 1998, I can tell you that was our understanding and intention. We know that when people are employed who are not ambulatory, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, under the Oregonians with Disabilities Act, they're required to provide ramps and other kinds of things. We understood this provision to mean that they wouldn't be, employers would not be required to provide areas where patients could medicate out of public view and in private. That was the point of the not accommodating. The nature of the discrimination is fairly simple and fairly straightforward. 475-300 sub 1 of the Oregon Revised Statute says that marijuana should be treated like any other medicine. And the way that employers discriminate against medical marijuana patients, Chair Przanski and members of the Commerce Committee, is by not following that direction, not following that finding from the people acting as a co-equal branch of the legislature, instead insisting that there are impairment issues, that there are problems relating to the possibility that there could be some use immediately prior. There is, in short, a disbelief about the medicinal value of therapeutic cannabis. And it is not only a good idea, and it's not just me telling you that, but it's the law. It's the law in our state. It's the law in 11 states. And we are moving closer every day to making it the law at the federal level as well. In that regard, the other document I've provided you with is from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I serve on their legal committee, and it is a model workplace policy for cannabis in the workplace, not just for medical cannabis, but otherwise. The biggest form of discrimination that comes up is that employees are obligated to take pre-employment screening tests or to take other kinds of urinalysis tests, and all that doesn't test for on-the-job impairment. It doesn't test for on-site use. It tests for use outside of the workplace. People are discriminated against because of their medication and, in some cases, unable to find employment. One such person who contacted me is Judy Adamson, and that's why I asked she be added to the panel. And unless the committee has any questions of me, I'd ask that you hear from her next.
Yeah, we'll take questions after we have the full panel. I prefer doing it that way instead of breaking it up.
Thank you, Chair Przanski. I just wanted to let you know that that's all I had to say at this point.
That's fine. Thank you. I guess, Ms. Adamson, I guess you're going to be our next speaker.
Thank you. My name is Judy Adamson, and I live in Beaverton, Oregon. I've been an Oregon medical marijuana program patient since January of 06. I was employed at the time for one of the best driving schools in the state. And as a behind-the-wheel driving teacher, before I got my card, I did notify my employer that I would more than likely like to be away from teaching the teenage drivers and maybe work in the office or doing some permit tutoring. And I thought at the time that everything was okay, that they had agreed with me, but the minute I got my card, I let them know, and I was terminated after they did send me for drug screening. I did check with John Harvey, who is in charge of the driver education for ODOT, and he says there's no state regulation on prohibiting me from being a driving teacher. Since then, I've had a lot of difficulties trying to get a job. I've been working mostly with WorkSource Oregon and also with Experience Works, which is a federal program aimed at people over the age of 55 to help them with job training. When I went in for a recent interview, I did tell the interviewer that I would prefer to be considered for jobs that did not require drug screening, because I was an OMMP patient. The interview was immediately terminated, and I was told that the interviewer, she would have to speak with her supervisor. I did speak with him several days later. He said that this is the first time he's had an experience with a medical marijuana patient, so he would have to get some guidelines, and he would get back to me. The bottom line is I need a job. I don't make enough through Social Security, survivor benefits, and food stamps to make my bills. And since I have the rest of it written out, you're welcome to read it, but that is the bottom line.
All right, thank you. Ms. Myers.
Chair Przonski, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon, here today in support of Senate Bill 423. I think you've heard that MMA was passed by voters, and the intent of that was to remove medical marijuana from the criminal process situation. And we know that OMMA patients can function and work in our society with the adequate use of medical marijuana to assist them in ways that allow them to be employable. What we run into at the front end is a problem with the federal government. Because they continue to schedule medical marijuana as a controlled substance Schedule 1, that means that doctors cannot legally prescribe it like they do for other pain medications that include codeine, amphetamines, or morphine. Those folks who are on those lawful medications do not have the barriers that you're hearing about today. What the employers are doing is using urine analysis to test impairment. And the problem with that is that marijuana, THC, lasts in your system for well over 30 days. So it does not actually determine if someone presents at the workplace impaired. Now, what we support is impairment-based testing, because you will hear it's often a safety issue. And in that case, we need to be worried about employees showing up who are suffering from huge amounts of fatigue, who are taking lawful medications, but who might be impaired. And what impairment-based testing does is, through video games and other equipment, it determines whether someone can actually, you know, the hand-eye coordination and the speed and all the things that you need to ensure that your employees are handling if they're going to handle safety equipment. Instead, as I said, the reliance on urine analysis simply will say that folks have something in their system that, again, indicates no way whether they are impaired. I think that's pretty much the focus of my testimony. We should pass Senate Bill 423 because Oregonians have spoken on the issue about the use of medical marijuana, that it should be lawfully prescribed, lawfully obtained, so that folks who have pain issues and other related medical conditions can function and work. And this barrier that's being put up is not only not well-intentioned, but it doesn't get us to the safety issue that is most often brought up by the employers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Mr. Berger and Ms. Meyer, a question for you, for one of the two of you, and that is, what duties at this point does an employee have in telling their employer when they are on some type of medication, in the sense of, if whatever that medication may be, are there rules or requirements that require that employee to disclose that they're under doctor's care or receiving or on some type of medication?
Chair Przonski, members of the committee, I don't know the answer to that. I would suspect that the rules are business by business based about whether they come forward and require a person to come forward and say whether they're on a certain medication. So it may be policy by policy, but Lee, I think that's a good question, and I would not want to be the ultimate source of that because I may have gotten it wrong, and I don't know, Lee, if you know.
I'm also, Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm also not certain, but I except to this limited extent. I know that when the federal government contracts with employers, they often require a drug-free workplace, and as a part of the drug-free workplace requirement, the employer requires employees as a part of pre-employment screening to undergo the kinds of questioning and the kinds of testing that occurred with Ms. Adamson. So I hope that's the best I can do. I will contact Phil Leibenbaum, who is the lawyer for Washburn and the Washburn versus Roseburg Forest Products case, and I'll request that he respond to the chair in writing about that.
All right. Any other questions?
I would like to.
One second. I think
yes. I would like to add that in my case, being a driving teacher, I felt that I had an obligation to tell my employer because they did have a drug policy in place.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, the law says that people who have certain needs, one of which I believe is chronic pain. Is that correct?
No. It's severe pain.
Severe pain?
Severe pain, yes, sir.
Okay. Severe
because
pain.
Because of the analgesic, Chair Przanski, Senator Monroe, because of the analgesic properties in therapeutic cannabis.
Okay. Now, if a person has severe pain, I assume they would need to use their medical marijuana on a daily basis.
That's not always the case, and let me share this with you if I could, Senator Monroe, and I know that there are other people here who can speak from the first person on this. What I found in the last 6.5 years of being involved on this issue is that people who were taking OxyContin, people who were taking, which is synthetic heroin, people who were taking Vicodin, people who were taking these conventional pharmaceuticals found that they were dopey and unable to function when they were taking these pharmaceuticals. When they took cannabis therapeutically, they weren't impaired by it. They weren't impaired that way. In the same ways, for example, if you ingested morphine just because you wanted to have ingest morphine and you would get all high, but if you had your leg amputated and you ingested morphine to deal with the pain, you wouldn't be high. It's that kind of a thing. And respectfully, Senator Monroe, this is the prejudice that forms the basis of the discrimination, that people are using this not as medicine, but that they're using it to get stoned. And the fact is, and you'll hear firsthand from many patients today, that people who are using this therapeutically are not impaired by it. So I hope that helps answer your question. But for what it's worth, it's a common misconception, and I'm not saying that people who prejudge in this manner are evil or wrong, or it comes from the fact that the federal government has been lying to us about this for the last 70 years. That's the basis that underlies the prejudice.
All right, is there anyone else, any other questions at this point? Thanks to this panel. The first next panel we're going to have are our first panel for those that are supposed to be 100 miles or further. I am going to be asking where you are from. Laird Funk. Mr. Funk, where are you from?
Williams, Oregon, 215 miles.
All right, you get to come up.
Thank you.
Jerry Culp.
Jacksonville, Oregon.
Jacksonville, that makes it cut. And then John Sejo.
I'm from Dillard, Oregon.
All right. Not Portland, though. All right. Mr. Funk, why don't you start off?
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Laird Funk. I'm from Williams, Oregon. I've got a short piece of testimony today. In 1991, United States EPA flew me to Washington, D.C. and gave me a national award for the work I did on environmental innovation and running my wastewater treatment plant and the composting process we developed. In 1993, I introduced in this legislature, Senator Frank Roberts carried the bill, Oregon's first medical marijuana bill. In 1996, I was fired because of my medicine. The thing about me being fired because of my medicine was, like everyone else that's been fired because of their medicine, it was simply because I used it. It was not because I was impaired by it. The medicine I used allowed me to do my job. I know hundreds of people in this state through my work whose use of this medicine allows them to do their job. It's the only thing that allows them to do their job. Mr. Berger related that ORS 475-300 says that marijuana is medicine and should be treated like all others. I found that there's a concerted effort in this building this year to treat this medicine as something special or, in fact, bad. I've offered a one-word amendment to this bill through your office that the word should be treated like medicine be word changed to shall be treated like medicine in the hope that that would allow a little more clarity. We seem to be seeking clarity on the issue. I believe shall is clear. I think what we see now with the word should there, though it carries significant weight, is that people who, for some reason, wish not to believe it is medicine, think they have the right not to treat it like medicine. The question was asked, what about other medicines in the workplace? My experience has been, in my other use of medicines in the workplace, my employer asked me, are you taking this medication? And if so, are you taking it in a manner which impairs you in the workplace? And if you can bring me a note from your doctor saying you are not taking it in a manner that impairs you in the workplace, that will satisfy me. We don't find that with medical marijuana. So I suspect that we need this bill to make it very clear that medicine is marijuana is medicine. It shall be treated like medicine, I hope. And if you do anything else, you are discriminating in the workplace against medical marijuana users. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see. I think next, Jerry.
Yes. My name is Jerry Culp, and I am a 62-year-old medical marijuana patient, and my condition is glaucoma. First of all, I have seen that some of the senators feel that the law was written for terminally ill patients. I am not terminally ill. I control the pressure in my eyes with medical marijuana. I don't use it in the workplace. I have a demanding job, which I feel that medical marijuana helps me with. I could take drops from my doctor, and I have tried those, okay? In my case, not with everybody, but in my case, it does cause me to have side effects that I don't want to have, such as pain in my eyes when I put them in. It also gives me headaches and sometimes nausea, so I do prefer to use medical marijuana. I don't use it in the workplace. You might want to ask me this, when do I use it? I use it in the evenings when I get home. I use it on the weekends. I ingest it. I don't always use the smoking method. This has not impaired me in my whole career in the last 8 years, being using it as treatment for my glaucoma. Now, if this SB 423 doesn't go through, what I'm going to have to do is choose whether I should go blind. My doctor has told me that if I don't control the pressure in my eyes, depending on how long I live, I will probably go blind in my later life, and I don't choose to do that. So I would have to choose between being able to work or going blind. So to me, that is not a choice that I think senators or anybody in the legislature should make for me. So please support SB 423 and oppose SB 465, and do not put thousands of Oregonians out of work. Thank you.
Thank you. John?
Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, my name is John Sajo. I'm the director of Voter Power, which is a nonprofit organization which works to reform marijuana laws. I helped draft the original Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and worked actively on that campaign and have worked defending this law ever since. I ask you to support Senate Bill 423 because we do need to prevent discrimination against medical marijuana patients. What we're really dealing with here is the problem and the fact that drug testing measures whoever used marijuana and not who's impaired by it. And it's discrimination because people could be at work impaired from OxyContin or morphine, or because they didn't sleep the night before, or because they had a fight with their wife, or all sorts of side effects of conditions. There's lots of reasons people could be impaired at work, and I think we all have a mutual interest in having a workforce that is free from impairment. The problem with the approach of 465 is that it doesn't look to impairment. It looks to who uses marijuana ever. It's discrimination. It's wrong, and I hope you won't make it the law. I elaborate a little more in my written testimony, but I think our country has a long history of discrimination. It's always been a bad thing. This bill, or allowing 465 to institutionalize discrimination, will be a dark day on our history, and I hope we don't let that happen. We've heard a lot about workplace safety, and I listened to the tape from the previous hearing. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend the hearing for 465, but we are told that impairment testing is too expensive. I don't believe it. I ask, why are we considering implementing and institutionalizing discrimination when there really isn't sufficient evidence to justify it? At that hearing, evidence was presented that the number of workplace accidents attributed to medical marijuana patients in Oregon was zero. So this looks a little bit like a problem in search of a solution here, and it doesn't need to be that way, or a solution in search of a problem. We're all for workplace safety. I think that impairment testing is the way to get that isn't discriminatory. At that hearing, we heard that employers seek clarity. I think that's absolutely appropriate. I'm an employer myself. I think every employer has rights, and they have a right to have employees that can do the job. That's not the same as being able to reach into their private life and question which medicine happens to work for them. I'd also add that for many medical marijuana patients, it's not really a choice, which also relates to whether this is discrimination or not. For some patients, it is a choice. There's other medicines that they could use that might be an alternative to medical marijuana, but for many, that's not the case. For many, medical cannabis is the only thing that effectively works for their condition without intolerable side effects. I also would like to speak to what I heard a little bit of at that previous hearing, that what's going on? We thought that, you know, this law, medical marijuana, was just going to be for a small number of terminally ill patients. That was never the case. Medical marijuana is medicine, and therefore, our goal is to promote it and have the maximum number of patients in Oregon that would benefit from it be able to do so. And we look at the fact that there's over 14,000 patients registered in this program now, registered by 2,451 different physicians. That's a success. It's not a problem. Doctors are qualifying patients for medical marijuana because it works and because it's safer than the alternatives. And I think it's true for the people medically, and it's also true in the workplace. If we, you know, fire people because they use medical marijuana and force them back onto OxyContin and morphine and Vicodin and other drugs, we're not going to create a safer workplace. We're going to create a more dangerous workplace.
Mr. Sejo, I'm going to ask you to wrap up so we can go on with the next panel.
Okay. I guess I would just ask in closing, I do think I think there's middle ground on this issue. When we wrote the first, when we wrote this law, we anticipated that employers would be able to prohibit employees from being on the job impaired. We did not anticipate that employers would be able to fire employees simply for which medicine worked for them. And I think that there is a way to accommodate the interests of employers and the interests of employees, and I might suggest that maybe a work group or something could look for this middle ground. Otherwise, we're going to be battling at this issue for a long time. I'd also ask that if we're going to institutionalize this form of discrimination that completely changes what the voters enacted in 1998, that maybe the legislature should consider referring this to the people so the voters can see if they want to change their mind and discriminate against medical marijuana patients, because I think the voters said that they didn't, and I hope the legislature won't change that. Thank you, Senator Prezanski.
Thank you. One point of clarification, Mr. Sejo, you make reference to having some written testimony.
Yes.
Have you handed that in yet?
No, I have it right here.
Okay. Just make sure you do before you leave. Are there any questions for this panel?
Yes, a question.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sejo, I have some testimony from a person in my district who represents herself as being a part of voter power, and she indicates that there are almost 15,000 Oregon medical marijuana patients. Does your organization keep track of how many of these patients are also employed, currently employed?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, we don't keep track of that. My experience is that, you know, I'd say roughly half the patients we deal with are employed and half are, you know, too ill to be employed, something on that order. But we don't have any firm statistics.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming forward and to testify.
Thank you.
All right, the next group that we have will be, first I need to ask Neil Larson. You have down Tigard, Oregon. Is that like Tigard, Oregon?
Tigard, Oregon.
Okay, I think you're less than 100 miles. So we'll take you up when we get into those individuals. That would take us to Cynthia Willis and Jim, I can't know if it's Greg or Greg?
Greg.
All right, and Mr. Greg, where are you from?
Right in your neighborhood, Eugene, sir.
In Eugene, okay. Yeah, Eugene. All right, that's less than 100 miles, so we'll get to you when we get to that part.
98 miles.
only if you go around the Beltline twice.
Keep that in mind, sir.
All right. So we got Cynthia, who is from Jackson County. Then I'm going to, that's all I have on the 100 mile list. What we'll do is we'll go to the top and carry on. And I have, I believe it is David Booth out of Washington County. And then Christy Carrick. Carrick. If y'all two would come up, that'd be great. And Cynthia, if you want to go ahead and get started. There you go.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Cynthia Willis. I'm from Gold Hill, Oregon, and I am a medical marijuana patient. I refer to myself as a retired school bus driver. I'm not really retired because I chose to use medical marijuana instead of driving children on muscle relaxers and codeine. I am also a championship driver in this state. I ranked second at state bus rodeo, which is quite an accomplishment. However, being a medical marijuana patient is a dual-edged sword. There are companies such as FTD.com and Bear Creek, which do accept medical marijuana cards because they find that the employees are generally conscientious. They don't come to work overly medicated. When I worked at FTD.com, I was in the top 10% of the employees there. The gal who sat next to me at the start of every shift would lean back with three or four pill bottles in her hand and say, "Want some?" It's like, no. And she was picking out the seven or eight pills that she was going to start the shift on. You know, just so irresponsible. And I believe that we should all be responsible to our employers and to society. And that's the beauty about 423, is that it recognizes that medical marijuana patients are people and should be treated like anybody else. Whereas with 465, I did the figures the other day, and if you force people like me to be on SSI or SSD, that is going to be over $9 million a month. Coming out of somewhere. Okay, instead, I would prefer to try to be a productive member of society. I own my home, I own my car, I pay my taxes, and I think that I should be treated just like anybody else. And I realize that I may look normal, but I have conditions caused by trauma in my childhood that make it very difficult for me to sit for long hours. And I can't just stock shelves or whatever. I've been blessed that my employers have, worked within my limitations. And in fact, at FTD.com, I was assigned a parking spot way out where nobody would smell what I was doing, and no one was allowed to bother me. Why? Because I did my job. So if people do their job, then this should not be an issue, and we should not be singled out. It should be whether you have a prescription drug that impairs you, then it impairs you no matter what it is. And I just look forward to all of you allowing us to be treated equally. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, David.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Pazansky. I'm David Booth from Tigard, Oregon. No person has a right to engage in unreasonably risky workplace activities, especially when those activities cause coworkers or bystanders to also be put at risk. Drunken forklift drivers or meth-addicted pilots are obvious examples of very unreasonably risky workplace behavior. Pain medicated workers on drugs like codeine and Demerol and oral morphine are lesser examples, but they still represent elevated risk. Even lack of sleep can result in lower job performance and slightly elevated levels of workplace risk.
All right, Mr. Booth, you're reading your testimony verbatim, and what I'm asking,
one page.
What I'm asking you to do is to not read it verbatim, summarize it, because we can all read it up here, and we want to make sure everyone else gets a chance to testify who wants to give oral testimony.
I understand. This is about, we all seem to accept those kinds of accidents. And just last year, I suffered devastating job loss, which ended my 27-year continuous employment history. I put a list of companies here that are very impressive. I have patents. I have made a huge amount of money in the past. Never had any problem finding work. The job offer I just lost last spring was for swing shift repair technician. I was completely honest about my need for needing a job and the fact that I had lost the health care. I had to find health care for my family. So even when I was upfront about it, after they had made me the job offer and the local people were ready to hire me, we went forward with drug testing. And then the day before I was to report, 3 weeks later, corporate offers from back east withdraws the offer. No particular reason given. So in summary, I could stop medicating for one whole month and I could still test positive and lose a job. How would regular citizens feel if they were not allowed to take their medication within weeks of attending work? I hope that sounds silly to you, because it is. Please support Senate Bill 423. I should say, despite looking into literally hundreds of job possibilities for a professional technical person like myself, I didn't run into a single firm that had any sort of policy for handling the legal, home-using, card-holding citizen. Thank you for your time.
Christy.
Hi, I'm Christy Carrick. I'm a cardholder in Senate District 14 in Alloa. And I'd like to first thank you for bringing the bill to the floor today. I'm here to support Senate Bill 423 that would protect the ability of unimpaired Oregonians who have registered with the OMMP to retain and seek employment. Every third Saturday, I meet in the Tigard Town Hall with other cardholders to discuss all the issues surrounding registering with the OMMP. I meet cardholders from all walks of life. There are people there who work for high-tech corporations in Washington County, as well as people on SSDI and people just trying to scratch out a living. For the most part, these people are not engaged at all in cannabis policy reform. They're just trying to carve out a life while they're dealing with debilitating disease and pain. And they have children to raise. They have mortgages coming due every month. And all the while, they have health care costs draining their bank accounts. And if they are to be discriminated against, it would ruin their lives. And there are not very many resources here in Oregon right now for adults. And I don't think we should strain it any further by restricting Oregonians who are able and willing to work that happen to have an OMMP card. I'm not sure if somebody else had brought up the part about impairment from cannabis lasts approximately 4 hours. So if somebody is using it in the evening, they would have it completely clear from any impairment by the morning. And the people I know who are employed, cannabis users, the ones that I know, do not use it before they go to work. They use it in the evening. And pretty much everybody covered all the facts that I had already. Other than these patients have not gone out and sought out debilitating diseases so that they can use cannabis. Instead, the pain and suffering has come and interrupted their lives. And please help them from having to choose between a safe and effective therapy that has made a positive difference in their life and employment, because one does not preclude the other. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much for coming forward to testify. Our next group is Ed Brown, Neil Larson, and Anthony Johnson.
afternoon, Chair Prozanski and Senators of the Committee of Commerce. I provided my written testimony, but I'm going to get onto a couple of other points here, and one of those is I would like to directly answer Senator Monroe's question about levels of marijuana that are required in to function on the job site. For medical marijuana is for debilitating illnesses. It was written as a medicine for debilitating illnesses. For 37 years, I myself have suffered from debilitating migraine headaches. These headaches hospitalized me on the average of 8 to 12 times a year, where I was rushed to the emergency room for shots of Demerol, and I was actually utilizing NSAIDs, ibuprofen, aspirin, to a point where it's forever toxic to me. I can never take an aspirin the rest of my life. As I, too, am a LAT chapter leader, have 120 patients that regularly attend my meetings every month. Like them, a lot of them are afflicted with chronic pain, chronic debilitating illnesses. Medical marijuana has been a wonderful prophylaxis at very low levels because it does remain active in your system for up to a month, like Neurontin or like some of the other drugs that you take from the pharmacy, where they say you take it for 2 weeks and you'll have enough in your system that it will be effective for you. The efficacy of that drug requires that you have it in your system all the time. Low levels of THC or cannabinoids actually prevent me from having migraine headaches. I can function. I am on top of the ball. You all may have received a letter from me, if you recall my name, as written testimony from an employer's point of view. For 30 years, I've been an employer, a manager, a foreman. Only with the low levels of THC in my system, which I would have failed a test. They are no way levels, half an ounce of cannabis a month is what I use for maintenance. With that amount of THC as my normal consumption, I am able to be at work every day. I am able to attend those meetings. I am able to make the decisions and run my business or run my department. I urge that the Senate committee use all your efforts and Godspeed to pass this bill, which would, there's other bills that we know when we've talked the numbers, 465 and others that are coming up before you all, that for some reason or another, they legitimize discriminatory practice in the workplace. I ask you to use all Godspeed and effort to please get this to the floor and help us take care of a problem that we don't need to be facing. Thank you.
Thank you. Neil?
Thank you, Senator Prozanski and members of the committee. My name is Neil Larson, and I reside in Tigard, Oregon, just outside of Portland. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in April of 2003. I became a cardholder in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program shortly after that. I've submitted written testimony for your review. I'd just like to say the main reason why we really need Senate Bill 423 is because of a bill that I attended a hearing on last week, Senate Bill 465, which basically is a bill that allows for the legal discrimination of Oregon medical marijuana patients. With Senate Bill 423, it will protect the rights of Oregon medical marijuana patients and give them protection which they already have under the law, but for some reason or another, there are those who do not wish to give them the rights that were granted to them by the voters of Oregon to use their medicine legally. We have the right to use our medicine legally here in Oregon. It helps so many people. It personally has taken me off of 4 different medications that I've used to control spasms, deal with migraines. and the pains that come along with them. The choice that you have today is to either support this bill and end or derail the proposed discrimination that SB 465 would set into place. I would urge you to support Senate Bill 423 and help protect the rights of Oregon medical marijuana patients. It's hard enough for patients to deal with debilitating conditions that have gotten them into the program. And to add discrimination to that list of debilitating conditions that these people deal with day in and day out, Senate Bill 423 would help protect those patients. Thank you.
Thank you. Anthony?
Yes. Chair, committee, thank you very much. My name is Anthony Johnson. I am political director of Voter Power. I work in Portland and live in Lake Oswego. I'm urging you to please support Senate Bill 423, which in my opinion just merely reinforces existing Oregon law and the will of voters. 475-300 sub 1 clearly states Oregon voters state that marijuana should be treated the same as other medicines. The other Senate Bill 465 and the will of employers to discriminate against medical marijuana patients, in my opinion, is simply contrary to the will of the voters. Then this is discrimination against medical marijuana patients, but not against patients who use other drugs such as morphine and Oxycontin, which are clearly more addictive and more intoxicating. And also, where's the proof that medical marijuana patients have been a danger to in the workplace or a danger in society? You know, if that data was brought forth, then maybe, you know, we need a solution. Maybe there is some kind of compromise to work out. But as of now, I think everyone realizes that the issue is impairment, not merely ingesting a drug, which they may have ingested just 4 weeks ago. And so impairment testing is the answer, not urinalysis. And really the question is, do we want all our medical marijuana patients, do we want to be productive members of society, or do we want a class of people to be discriminated against and permanently unemployed? And so I urge you to please support Senate Bill 423. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Monroe.
Voter Power Foundation, can you tell us a little bit about that organization, how it was founded, and who's in it, who supports it?
Yes. Well, there are many supporters here. You heard from our executive director already. Voter Power Foundation was formed in response to the legislature who, when the legislature in 97 recriminalized an ounce or less of marijuana, Voter Power led a referendum campaign to overturn that decision and reclaim the will of the people to make marijuana possession under an ounce a decriminalized civil violation instead of criminal activity. Voter Power also, its members also helped write and campaign for the medical marijuana law. Voter Power stands up for medical marijuana patients and runs clinics and assists patients in virtually all aspects of their lives. When they get discriminated against by their doctor, discriminated against by their employer, by their landlord, we're there to assist medical marijuana patients in every aspect of their lives.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. I'm going to take a little liberty here. Jim, Greg, I'm going to have you hold for a second because you're also with Voter Power. I also see that we have four people that are here from Mercy Center, and I'm not sure if all four need to or want to testify. If you're going to be repeating each other, I hope that you will consolidate your testimony. So why don't you all think about that? I'm going to go ahead and pick up Sarah Duff, and then I've got Jennifer, I believe it's Valley, but I'm not sure. Val, okay. And then John Martinez. And Sarah?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sarah Duff. I'm from Lake Oswego. I work in Lake Oswego at Pizzicato. I'm the general manager. And I'm the general manager of 30 employees, but I have more than enough authority to fire someone if they are not doing their job correctly or efficiently. There's no need for any bill that would say that I need to fire someone for being a patient of any sort. I need my employees to work quickly and efficiently, and if they do not do that, I have all authority I need to fire someone. Giving able-bodied adult patients obstacles to employment is only going to burden taxpayers, as they will eventually have to resort to using the black market to pay their bills. There are far worse drugs out there that burden my employees that for example, you know, any kind of drug that has already been mentioned. I've accepted the responsibility of punishing and or terminating your responsible employees. Additional discrimination is not necessary, nor should it be tolerated. I have already had to terminate one employee for who was on medication that I have asked them several times if that medication was preventing them from being able to do their job, and it was not medical marijuana. And she said that it was not impairing her and that it was just her inability to do the job. Because she could not do the job, I did have to terminate her. That there's no need for any additional discrimination. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer.
My name is Jennifer Valley. I'm on the board of directors for Willamette Valley Normal, and I'm the head of Stony Girl Gardens, the top medical cannabis breeder in Oregon. And my husband is the chief information officer for Disability Access Consultants Incorporated. They are the nation's largest ADA consulting firm. He was also a member of Chapter 31 Task Force that made the recommendations to the state in regards to modifying the Oregon codes to reflect federal requirements for accessibility. He asked me to tell you that he feels it's his duty to warn you that SB 465 is in direct violation and conflict of Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and as such will be subject to challenges that will be afforded by law. He also says to ask you to consider such actions prior to placing the state in jeopardy and without regard to federal laws and prosecutions for such violations. Such violations would be on a case-by-case for each incident, accumulating in much more debt to the state than is recognized. Frequently, fines start at $5,000 per violation per day until it's fixed. So, just wanted to let you know that as a patient who's had the most advanced case of thyroid cancer ever seen at OHSU, I was diagnosed at age 25, and I have used every anti-nausea medication, and what I found, it confirms federal studies that showed that for 90% of patients, smoking medical marijuana is more effective than any other antiemetic, including Marinol and Fenugreek and Naproxen. And I'd like to tell you that fenugreek is not fun. It makes you too stupid to chew your food, let alone cook it. Also, I also use medical marijuana because I've been on so many pain drugs. I was on Demerol for a long time. I was on Darvocet for a long time, many years, actually. And my stomach cannot tolerate pills anymore. I've had too many. I just can't do it. I'm allergic to codeine-based drugs, so the drugs that the doctors are willing to give people will kill me. And because I've had so many things cut out of me, I have some problems with calcium, which for the first 8 years of my treatment meant that I would go to the emergency room 9 times a year. Since the Medical Marijuana Act, I've found that I don't go to the emergency room anymore. And I found out last year that the reason for this is because the CB2 receptor in your brain is responsible for regulating your calcium uptake and your bone density. My calcium issue, completely unregulated. Now that I'm on marijuana, is totally regulated. I haven't been to the emergency room in 8 years. I haven't worked in many years, but I'm getting to a point where I have to make a decision whether I want to go ahead and treat my stage 4 cancer, or do I want to go ahead and live? And if I decide to go ahead and live, I could possibly go out and get a job, but not if 465 passes. 423 would possibly make it possible for me to work, but 465 cuts me out of the workforce. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Martinez?
Yes, sir. I, 35 years ago, I took an oath.
Mr. Martinez, I need you to first identify yourself for the record.
Okay. My name is John Martinez.
Okay.
And I have been a long-time advocate. Actually, I've been an advocate, but because it was illegal, until I got legal, that I'm also a nurse. I worked as a male nurse for 10 years. and I've done much research in it. And the thing is we don't want government control because, well, let me put it this way. I've been all over America, and Oregon is one of the leaders. It was the leader in the bottle bill. It's a leader in one of the best medical marijuana laws in the nation, period. It's a, just as like the bottle bill was in back in 1970s. As she was saying, in the human body, in our brain, we have many neurotransmitter receptors, and cannabis hits those certain receptors that provides relief and pain. When I was in the military, they would put me on morphine for 10 days straight. And then I would go to Percodan. And then they would put me back on morphine for 10 days straight. And back. And then they put me on Phenofen 3s, which is 30% aspirin, 30% phenobarbital, and 30% codeine. And from there, I've been taking 800 milligrams of ibuprofen, TID, three times a day, for the last about 27 years. And as a result of that, these are all the medications I still take.
Okay. A big bag full of
them. As a result of it, I have to take one of the strongest. I have to take one of the strongest antacid type. It's called rapamycin, and it's the strongest anti acid I get, because the ibuprofen causes, and the studies have shown that it causes that.
Mr. Martinez? Mr. Martinez, I'm going to need you to wrap up, but let me just ask you, it sounds like what you're saying, because you're on medical marijuana, it's giving you relief where these others have not caused as much?
Yes, and I'm against the 465 because...
Yeah, we're here on 423.
I know. I'm getting to it.
Okay. The thing is, I want to make sure everyone has an opportunity to testify.
Yeah, and... back to what I'm saying is that because I've gone through and asked to be taken off the Soma, I asked to be taken off the 10 milligrams of Valium TID, and I've been since then reduced to Flexeril and 2 milligrams of Valium since I've been on the medical marijuana. And I don't like being impaired. Soma impaired me. Soma, the hydrocodone, that impaired me. And so I am calling, as you gentlemen, honorable members of the cabinet here, that you would vote in favor of 423.
All right. Ms. Martinez, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there any questions for anyone? Thank you. Next panel I'm going to call up will be Jared Griswold, Lisa Trussler, and Jessica Adamson. Trussell, excuse me. I said that wrong. I knew that when I said it. I'll never live it down either.
Chairman, go back. Sir, if I change that to Americans for Safe Access, I was going to on my signing sheet, would that change anything? As opposed to border power?
We'll get there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Jeswald. I'm manager of employer services at Serenity Lane for the last 25 years. I'm also a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. I used marijuana daily for about 7 years. The issue here is not about discrimination, in my opinion. It's about safety and workplace safety. And I might add that what we do know about marijuana I've provided you with some information that shows the results of two studies, one in which residual impairment cognitively does occur. The problems with the program, I am not here to take medicine away from people that need it, because I think, having been a user of marijuana, that there are some medicinal properties to that drug. There's obviously enough people that are mentioning and testifying that they're getting relief, and I think that needs to be recognized. The concern, when the medical marijuana law first went into effect in 98, I thought then we'd be where we are today. And that is that I thought there would be quite a few people applying for medical marijuana cards, and that didn't occur. In fact, there were about 100, I think, in the first year. It's what's happened to the program, and one could look at it two ways. One, as has already been mentioned, the success of the program, and it has been extremely successful with the number of cards that have been issued. Another way of looking at it is it might be being abused. And I can say that from the perspective of an addict. The concerns that I have, and I will say that 85% of the cards that have been issued for severe pain, and I apologize because I titled it chronic pain, and I know that that has been changed to severe pain. In the past 3 years, I've dealt with about 30 employers that have called me after an employee tested positive in their testing program. And in 100% of those cases, the card was presented after they tested positive, at which point the employer was confused as to what, number one, they could legally do versus what they wanted to do. And by the way, there are some employers that will employ people with medical marijuana cards. It's not like everybody's being discriminated against and being fired as a result of it. Some will. The higher the risk to the workplace, the lower the tolerance. The concerns that I have to do with, unlike other medications, there are no dosages. There's no dosage recommendations. And the amount of marijuana that a cardholder can possess today is, by any standard, a large amount. I mean, the comparison that could be made is a doctor writing a prescription open-ended for Vicodin, for Prozac, for any other drug, and they won't do that. All drugs, including marijuana, have side effects. The activeness of a drug, whatever that drug is, in terms of a primary effect, occurs in the brain, and it changes the brain's biochemistry. THC is fat-soluble. Brain's the fattiest tissue in the body. The other concern I have, and this would speak to, and not to the folks that have a legitimate need or reason for it, but that the people that are abusing this program, and as a result of abusing this program, could ruin it for everybody. The question was asked in this room 2 weeks ago by a senator. What he wanted to know was, why do we have 19,000 cards? Again, it could be either success or abuse, depending upon how you look at it. We need more science-based information, and I would say it's not only what we know about marijuana, because we've got arguments on both sides of the fence, to impairment to non-impairment. The issue is what we don't know. And I think until we do know, and until we have more science-based evidence to allow this to go through, would be a detriment to the risk in the workplace, as well as to employers having to not be asked if they'll accommodate, but be told that they will accommodate. And as I mentioned before, there are employers out there that will hire people that have medical marijuana cards. So I urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 423 so that the Oregon law can be more consistent with other laws, and the employers will be less confused.
Thank you. Lisa?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and we're here also with some concerns about Senate Bill 423. As you know, we've been very supportive of another bill, which number I won't state. And this bill is kind of like the absolute opposite of what 465, which I said, I'm sorry, would do. One of the things I wanted to point out today was that the Employment Department did a survey of employers, and it was a pretty large survey, and I think it had a plus or minus of 3 to 4% accuracy. And what they've learned is that right now 13% of Oregon employers actually do drug testing. And so, you know, the fear that something dramatically is going to change simply because of one bill passing or not passing, I'm not too sure about. But the point I'd like to make is that employers do drug testing for a variety of reasons. Some just want to have a drug-free workplace. Some have an obligation because they receive federal contracts. When you set up your program, as most of them are set up, you're not testing impairment. You're testing for a panel of 3 to 5 drugs, and you're either testing, and it'll either come out positive or negative. And so, again, and I know that there is at least one individual that's testified about the computerized test, and I don't doubt that they exist, but I did check with two of the testing labs in the state of Oregon. One is, I believe, in your district, Mr. Chair, and they're not aware of any, where they get their certification to do the testing, they're not aware of any approved computer simulated testing that, and I couldn't get the individual here today, and I'd be happy to provide that to you at a later date. But so we have to rely on the tests that are available and that are affordable. And we're not, again, they don't test for impairment. They simply test on the basis of whether the drug's in. But the point being is that there are employers today that are accommodating medical marijuana. I heard some testimony from some folks today. I don't see that changing, nor do I see that there's a need for 423.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Jessica?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adamson here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. I have 1,100 members in Oregon, Southwest Washington, that build roads, highways, bridges, and skyscrapers. My folks that work in a very high-risk profession. They've got folks on the side of the freeway, folks in heavy equipment. Their safety and the safety of the folks on the work side is paramount. We also work on federal contracts, and many of our folks have to pass federal DOT regulations as it relates to driving because of moving equipment and moving material. Our reality as employers, and as sympathetic as we are to those who use medical marijuana, our reality is that we have the federal government to deal with. And there was some testimony earlier by the ACLU about the frustration with the federal government putting marijuana as a Schedule I drug. The reality is we as employers, we can't change that. And as we sit today, that isn't going to change. Our reality is today, and our requirements to get our folks certified and move through the federal contract process. What we're concerned about is 423 would put us in direct
conflict.
Thank you. Conflict with the federal government and the federal requirements. And that's a real problem for us. As employers, we are bound by the requirements that the federal government's put in place to get those certified, and that is where we are. They require a urine test, and they specify the panel of drugs, and marijuana is on there. And so our hands are tied. 423 would be a real put us in a real bind. We're very concerned about that. Drug-free workplace policies for us involve urine testing and usually involve medical marijuana, or excuse me, marijuana metabolites. They test for that. We are, again, discrimination is not something that the construction industry wants to engage in. This is not what this issue is about for us. What it is about are drug-free workplace policies. What it is about is safety, and it is about complying with federal requirements. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm more than happy to answer any questions and, again, express our very grave concern about Senate Bill 423.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
Senator Gordley.
I have a question for, I want to pronounce the name correctly. Is it Mr. Jesfold?
That's correct. Thank you.
I want to make sure that I'm understanding your testimony correctly. I'm looking at your written testimony. And it appears that you've worked with 30 employers.
More than 30 in the last 3 years.
Okay. Looking at what you have here, 30 employers who had employees test positive for THC.
Correct.
Where the employee presented the card after the test.
Correct.
And so your testimony suggests that there have been at least 30 cases. Is that what you're wanting us to understand?
That I've been personally involved with,
at
yes.
least 30 cases.
Yes.
With 30 different employers.
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
And universally, the card, there is nothing in the medical marijuana program that forces a person that holds a medical marijuana card to present that card. And so, at least with the experiences that I've had, they've never been presented until being forced to or choosing to at that point.
Okay. And again, I'm not making a judgment about what you're presenting to us. I'm just trying to understand
yeah.
make sure that I understand what it is you're presenting
yeah,
to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, quick question for Jessica. It has been suggested that if the feds allowed you, that what we ought to be doing is testing for impairment rather than testing for the fact that somebody has used marijuana sometime in the last month. Would it be possible, would it be possible for your employers to test for impairment before they allowed a person on the job? I can think the people testified that in most cases they smoked at night and that by the morning the impairment was over. I taught high school for 21 years, so I know about marijuana impairment. Would it be possible for your employer to check for impairment before they allowed somebody on the job? Would that be feasible?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, we are familiar with only one measure, and we've heard testimony about this video game type system. Like Ms. Cuzzle, we are unfamiliar with that system, and in my contacts, we were unable to find out anything more about it or its efficacy. I would say that the only other system that we are familiar with is the one that law enforcement goes through in order to come to a test for impairment. However, it is our understanding that to get to that level where you have that training is an extensive and expensive process. And so it's a practical matter for many of my employers that have fewer than 10 employees to put somebody through that extensive training to get them to a point where they would be able to test for that level of impairment in the same way that law enforcement can. It's just not practical.
May I add that the other piece to that is that they could lose federal contracts. I mean, that those funds would not be received by the employer, so that money would go away for up to 5 years.
Mr. Chair and Senator Monroe, I would agree with that. This is assuming, again, that the federal government would allow us to do that.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jessica. I appreciate that because I thought about what it would be like, and I've been an employer, what it would be like to have to test every employee every day to see if they're impaired.
All right. One question for you, Jessica. Regarding your testimony, if I understood it correctly, if a person is prescribed the pharmaceutical equivalent of marijuana and they test it hot in the sense of their urine came up with a positive, they would be disciplined or terminated because they were on a prescribed medicine?
Chair Przanski, my understanding is that at that point in time, an employer, based upon their policy, may choose to do so. I can't speak for every case, but employers who have policies may choose to dismiss somebody based upon that.
And have your organization or any of your employers looked into whether or not they would be in violation of the ADA or any other federal protections for individuals with disabilities?
Mr. Chair, I have not, and I cannot speak for my employers in that regard.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Ms. Kessel may be able to answer that question better than I can.
Well, Mr. Chair, also, if they test positive for something that's on the panel,
Typically, there's a medical review officer or something like some person like that. And again, Grant Beardsley with the OML would be a good person for that question. But they go over the results with the individual. And so some of those positives may or may not get to the employer depending on the situation, and that's where the medical review officer comes in, and that's about as much as I know about that position, but I do know that they exist, and I think that Mr. Beardsley would be a good one for us to talk to in the future on that. Also, it's my understanding the ADA does not protect current users. So,
users in what sense?
Any drug that's on that list on the...
The disconnect is between federal disability laws and state disability laws.
Right.
But the federal ones, there are no exception.
They would
okay.
be
a state.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. The next panel I'm going to call up is Mark Branlin, I believe it is, and Jeff Dean. And then I also have, it looks like Maria Kelter, says Association Oregon Counties.
Kelher.
Sure. Okay, I called Mark's name first, so if Mark wants to go first, that'd be great. And as I said, some of my committee, if not all of them, are going to need to leave. They're not out of disrespect, but they have duties they have to get done by 5 p.m. This is that last day for them to make sure all bills have been filed that they need to. I will stay until a quarter till, and we'll shut it down at that. So if we could summarize the testimony. I've got probably another eight people that wanted to testify.
Thanks, Chairman Przanski and Council or members. My name is Mark Branlund. I am on the Work Drug-Free Employers Advisory Council. So virtually what we do, we've been working with the employers in the state of Oregon that was set up through the Oregon Business Plan that we've been working on for the last 3 or 4 years. And we're in contact with all the employers, and we're trying to help them set up work drug-free programs. The work drug-free does not necessarily mean that we're just trying to get them, you know, to be work drug-free, although that's one of our goals. The other part of our goals is to set up alternatives for how they deal with employees in case there's a positive testing, in case the employee comes to them for help. There are a significant amount of employers in the state that currently have EAP programs that are set up to help with these situations. They're having a hard time right now really trying to set the guidelines. They don't know what to do. We have been working with employers who cannot find a workforce to go to work for them because they can't pass drug screens and pre-employment screening. So part of our job is to help them through this process. We actually have an employer in the city of Portland who has over 1,000 people barred from their jobs. He's a construction company because they have not been able to pass a drug screen. And as a construction company, they worry about folks that are safety conscious issues on the job site. My sense of what we're dealing with here is, again, we're taking away some of the employer's rights. And as much as I, you know, appreciate the fact that people sitting behind us need the drug that they're on to do their job, we also have to pay attention to what the employer's rights are and having people work for them who can provide whatever it is, you know, the tasks that are set aside for them and their employees. I also spent 9 years working in the drug and alcohol treatment field, and I'll just end with this. I always found it interesting in working in the field. It was the brain that was affected that was always making the vocal decision about whether it was affected or not. And that's what a lot of employers are being faced with today. So I thank you.
All right, we don't need any comments from the testimony. Please keep your comments to yourself. Mr. Branlin, thank you for your testimony. Jeff?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dean. I work for the Associated Builders and Contractors Pacific Northwest Chapter. We represent primarily commercial construction contractors. I'm here this afternoon to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 323. As I'm sitting here listening to some of this testimony and some of this broader debate with both of the bills that are on the table down here in the legislature, I'd just like to point out on behalf of Associated Builders and Contractors, and this has been touched on before, this clarity that everybody's seeking is not really a clarity that, yes, we can discriminate against individuals who have a medical marijuana card. The clarity they are seeking in law is to state that marijuana is a potentially intoxicating substance, and as such, individuals who are under its influence, particularly on a construction job site, pose a threat to not only themselves, but to every other worker on that job site. So I'll summarize it there, but we do ask that you oppose Senate Bill 323 and allow our employers to continue. 423, thank you, Senator Monroe.
I was going to correct you after you
finished. Thank you. Oppose Senate Bill 423, and with that, I'll end my testimony.
All right, thank you. And Maria?
Maria Keltner, speaking for the Association of Oregon Counties. Not going to repeat the testimony that those preceding me repeated, but we do have the same concerns in counties in terms of safety in the workforce. We have a lot of jobs where we really need people, well, in every job, but some particularly are safety-conscious jobs. And we also deal with federal money from the federal government, which requires certain kinds of testing for certain jobs. With that, I'll just end my testimony.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the panel? Thank you all very much. All right, going back up with Jim Greer, Greg, and then the ones for the Mercy Center. If y'all, you have, there's four: William Watkins, and I believe it may be Janet Yuska.
USAC.
Y'all want to come up and testify? And what I'm going to need you to do is limit your testimony to about 2 minutes. I'm going to try to get everyone in before I have to go upstairs and take care of the remainder of my work before
Thank
the
you.
5 o'clock hour. That would be fine. Thank you.
Can we go ahead?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank everybody else, but they're gone. It's not on my statement here, but apparently the people at the PACs are having a hard time finding dexterity tests. Any search engine will find them. I found over 300 on Google, on Yahoo, so I don't think they'll have a problem finding any dexterity testing along with the new one out by...
Jim, I need you to just put your name on the record, please.
James Gregg, G-R-E-I-G, Eugene, Oregon. I'm with a group called Americans for Safe Access, and we are addressing the federal issue. It does seem to be a major concern here in the state, but it's only a federal law. It's not applicable here, I don't think, in Oregon. There's some of the companies that have federal contracts may need to comply with that. But there's really, for instance, myself, a number of patients that aren't terminal. I have rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, suffer from pain and glaucoma. None of these things I'm going to die of. And there seems to be a lot of question about the cardholders and the number of cardholders in the state. I'm not going to die, but I am experiencing a lot of pain until I do. And that's the reason I have the card. While I was employed at Verizon, I was medicating not only in advance, but medicating orally, and was able to set sales records. I realized I wasn't dealing with safety equipment, but as far as performance on the job and giving the employer as much as you have, I was able to do that. And I very much encourage you to support Senate Bill 423. And one other thing I'd like to point out to some of the people at the various PACs here that are having a problem, not only the dexterity testings, but the problem with this is, of course, it's Schedule 1. And that's being worked on. I think that'll about do it. Most of my other testimony has been covered.
Thank you very much for your testimony and reducing it. William?
Yes. My name's William Watkins. I'm with the Mercy Center here in Salem. I'm a patient. I've been paralyzed. I've been in a coma. I have half a brain. All these drugs that these people told you about, they're real. They've had me on handfuls and bags full of drugs. I'm allergic to everything but morphine. I was on morphine for almost 10 years. It almost killed me. I've been off all narcotics since 1998. I still have a lot of issues, but we can get through this without being discriminated against. And I'll just wrap it up at that because pretty much it's all been said.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And you are?
Michelle Land.
Okay, if I can get Michelle, just kind of point the mic towards you so we make sure.
Over here?
Yeah.
My name is Michelle Land.
Okay.
I have MS, and I have severe chronic pain, chronic fatigue, and it keeps going on. I believe that the failure of this law will take so many people out of work. I have been out of work, and it was because of my MS. I could no longer lift more than 10 pounds, so they kind of gave me the finger. And that's before my pain started, and then my pain started, and I had to find something, and nothing worked. Now I have the medical cannabis, and now I'm looking behind myself, even in my own house. And it's the only thing that keeps me going. I have three children, and it helps so much. And I would love to be able to work again, but right now it does not seem like that would be an availability to me. And that's it.
Okay. Michelle, thank you very much for giving us your testimony. Thank all of you. Okay. Let's see. Pete Kramer and Douglas Heller or Hewler. I'm not sure if it's a U or LL.
Hoyer.
Hoyer. And then Jim Christensen.
He just walked out.
Okay, then how about Kelly Logsdon? Okay, Pete?
Thank you, sir. Thank you for letting me speak.
You bet.
Please have great consideration for the...
Your name first, please.
Pete Kramer.
Thank
of
you.
Independence, Oregon.
Okay.
Pardon. Thank you for having me here and speak. Please have great consideration to the patients. We're all in great pain and in great need. And the cannabis is what helps us get through this need in one way or the other. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you very much for giving us your testimony. Douglas?
Chairman Brzezinski. I'm a registered caregiver, and I live here in Salem, Oregon. I also came to your office last Friday, maybe a little amendment for the bill to possibly prohibit metabolite testing. I got three quotes down here from the National Institute of Drug Abuse that basically says that it doesn't detect THC, the actual drug anyway, and that it actually helps therapeutic drugs, in fact, improve and enhance performance. And I've got some quotes down there for you to look at.
Okay.
And that it studies have done with drivers, that it helps, that it's not that impairment of a position as opposed to other drugs or alcohol. My wife has epilepsy and uses it to control her seizures. This bill that you brought would help protect her from discrimination in the workplace. And I kind of cringe when they talk about the drug-free workplace when there are so many other drugs that we use, like coffee, aspirin, and stuff like that that's used in the workplace. It's kind of discriminatory when they pick one drug and they say, we can't use that. But, and all the rest of my testimony is taken as well.
Okay. Well, thank you for shortening your testimony. And Kelly.
My name is Kelly Logsdon. I'm from the Portland area. In 1990, I had a cerebral hemorrhage. I was left with epilepsy. For 10 years, I took all the seizure drugs they gave me, along with the pain medications for my back, because I also have spinal arthritis. Added to that, 4 years ago, they started giving me medication for glaucoma. The seizure medication made me so sick, no matter which one they tried. The only one that I could keep down was phenobarbital. But between the phenobarbital and the OxyContin and the Flexeril, I was non-functional. I was raising two children. It's going to take me years to get back the years I lost to those drugs. I'm starting to get them back. I've been here 2 years. I've been using medicinal marijuana that long. And it's making a difference. Now to tell me I'm not worthy of having a job isn't right.
All right, thank you.
All I had to say.
Thank you for your testimony. The last person, please hold your applause. and stuff. I know everyone's very passionate about the issue, but we just try to get through everyone we can. The last person I have on the list that signed up to testify is Catherine Cohen. Is there anyone else who would want to testify, realizing we will be closing in 5 minutes because I have some duties upstairs before the 5 o'clock hour? So we're not going to be able to do everyone. You've already testified, and you've already testified.
Your Honor, can we interject a statement?
No. Ma'am, if you want to come forward, if you we'll let you testify as well. And I don't think you've testified either. Okay, y'all, this will be our last panel. If you'll give us your name.
Yes, I'll try and be expeditious. My name is Catherine Kane, and I live in Lane County. I'm the president of the Oregon Green Free in Eugene, and I'm here to briefly advocate for the 100 members and patients that we have in our group, because I know the efficacy of the medical marijuana, and I'm afraid that the general public and employers are not aware of it because federal research has not been allowed, and we're glad that there are national groups that are pursuing that to rectify the law. But since you have no, there's no proof that this is actually an issue, or and you had testimony here from employers that show that indeed, as long as the person is able to perform their job, that should be the bottom line, then there should not be allowed this type of discrimination. And if you are going to allow it, then I'm going to afraid I'll have to demand that you include alcohol in there as well, because alcohol has killed hundreds of thousands of people. And some guy might kill you tonight that is driving like that, poor those musicians that were killed on I-5 the wrong way. That type of thing, if you're going to try and have a type of discrimination that you're proposing against medical marijuana, then you better start on alcohol, which is really a drug. So I will briefly encourage you to not give the public perception that you have some sort of persecution of medical marijuana patients. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And, ma'am, if you'll be so kind to identify yourself.
Yes, thank you. My name is Brenda Cloutier, and I'm from
Portland. Could you spell your last name?
C-L-O-U, T like Tom, I-E-R.
Thank you.
And I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm a medical marijuana patient. I have been since November of 2005. I'm also an alcoholic who has almost 17 years of sobriety, knock for mica and wood. It was a extreme emotional, mental balance for me to finally come to terms with saying, okay, the drugs that my rheumatologist have prescribed for me aren't working. I need to look at something else. I was on a combination of Flexeril and Neurontin and two others. That just had me totally whacked out. I drive to the store, not having taken anything that day, and I would drive to the store and found myself out in Forest Grove and wonder how I got there. I have not had that problem since I became a medical marijuana patient. I've been able to get rid of everything except for quarter of a milligram of clonazepam or clonopin and my Effexor. Being an alcoholic in recovery, I still say that I am clean and sober because what I do take is medically recommended. Yes, my brain is altered by marijuana. My brain is also altered by the antidepressants that I take. The antidepressants that I take have also been cut in almost half since my use of medical marijuana. Today I can function. And I have been giving serious thought to going back into the workplace. However, I have been fortunate enough to have spent the time, took 2 years and 8 months, to get Social Security disability. Because when I do go back to work, it's only for six months at a time before I collapse again. So I wanted to come up here and say that medical marijuana has actually made me less impaired as a person than more impaired, which I was on the federally recognized legal drugs that my doctor prescribed to me. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. And you'll be our last speaker.
Hi, Senator Piskoski. My name is Gary Jenkins, and I'm from the Springfield area.
I've been disabled for over 23 years from an industrial construction accident. I was on methadone for many, many years, along with Percocet, Percodan, Codeines, you name it. I was on it. All I did was drool all over myself while I laid on the couch. I had no quality of life whatsoever. In 1998, when the voters passed this medical marijuana bill, I'm able to function and get up and move around today. If there's any type of problem with having to deal with trying to get into a workplace in the future, my whole hopes on that will be completely shut down if Senate Bill 423 isn't passed. So I'm here today to ask you, please, you know, we're sick, we're disabled, we're dying folks that are trying to do the best that we can to live in society today. We have many problems that we try to deal with on daily issues with our medical problems, and to have to try to deal with something like maybe wanting to get a job and not being able to because you test positive for medical marijuana, I think that's wrong. I think if you're going to test for medical marijuana, you should also test for your methadone and your Percocets, because those are really harmful. I'm not allowed to take that medication anymore because of my liver. I have very serious liver damage, and those medications are killing me. So I have to use medical marijuana to survive. So I wanted to thank you for letting me speak.
You bet. Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone for being here today. I also want to thank you for your patience. I know it's a very emotional issue for many people here. I also want to thank you for your respect that you have for everyone that spoke here today, either for or against the measure. And we're going to conclude our public hearing at this time. Thank you very much for being here at the Capitol. No, I think I had mine.